Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Elizabeth Rice from Delicato Vineyards. How are you, Elizabeth?
No, I'm great. Thanks, Chris.
Brilliant, brilliant. We're going to talk about Delicato today and a wee bit of the history, etc. But what's your role with Delicato?
I'm the regional sales manager of Europe. For the family, for Delicato family, managing all our European markets, thing from Iceland to Russia, I always say.
So much wine in Iceland.
Yeah, actually.
Really?
They like their wine up there. And then,
I imagine. When it gets the colder the place, the more they
drink. Yeah, what you do when it's cold outside, you cuddle up with a nice big red Zinfandel and a...
Yeah, actually, that does make sense, doesn't it?
It does.
Makes a bit of sense. All right. Let's start off a wee bit with... Delicato, I think you were saying earlier you're the sixth largest winery in the U.S. or California.
We are, yeah, and we're we're an important producer in the California area, because we're a good sized producer, but we're not the largest by any means. They're still much larger than us. But the nice thing is, the family, we do own quite a bit of property, but most of that, all of it, is in areas, premium areas like Monterey, Lodi, and the Napa Valley.
So you don't have gallons of jug wine coming out of the Central Valley?
No, we do not own anything in the Central Valley. When the family came to California in the 1910s, they originally planted themselves in the Lodi region of California. And it's there that they started the winery, and built the winery and started buying vineyards. And Lodi, as you know, is really well known for their red old vine, red Zinfandels, and crisp, refreshing style Viogniers with lots of that stone fruit. And then when the grandchildren took over, who's in charge of it now, so it's a third generation winery, they bought it.
When was that?
Actually, the grandchildren only took over about 12 years ago.
Yep.
So the second generation is now watching their children run the winery, which, must give them they have a lot of strength to just let it go and let their children do it. But they are really proud of what their children have done because the third generation are the ones who really started focusing on the branded side of the business. Because historically, Delicato were selling grapes and making wine for other wineries.
Mm-hmm.
It's the third generation that started to realize that these wines that they're making are winning awards and are really high quality. They said, well, we should create our own brands then. And then they did. And we've had a lot of success since then.
Actually, there's something interesting is you've got quite a lot of different brands. The wines I know quite well are things like your Delicato family wines, but also the Clay Station Viognier. And if you try and find anything about who made Clay Station Viognier, it's pretty hard to track you down to Delicato. You've got a website all about Clay Station Viognier, doesn't really mention Delicato itself. So branding is quite fragmented.
We let the brands, speak for themselves. We have brands created focusing around specific regions or concepts or ideas to showcase, either like a region like Zinfandel and Lodi or Monterey Pinot Noir. And then, we let the brands really tell the story. When I come and do wine tastings, I'll of course then mention who makes in the Delicato family. But we, because Delicato haven't been doing brands for 50 years, like some of the Mondavis in California, they had to start take a little different approach to it.
I suppose they haven't really got a brand that sort of says Delicato family wines. There's no, you've got your Delicato range, but then you do have these other ranges, which to me, it just makes them a bit scattered almost. I don't know if that's a good idea or not.
No, it's actually worked really well. I mean, as a company, we've been growing double-digit growth in the past 5 years because of that focus of having different brands, because can channel strategy them, focus them with different distributors and not have conflicts within markets, so then everybody's happy. Again, we just focus on the brand and creating a story around that and showcasing something special, strategy with that brand.
And what are your brands?
Our key brands, because, we have, like you said, we have about 20 different brands in our portfolio, but our most important key brands is Gnarly Head is one of our most important, which Gnarly Head really focuses on old vines, Zinfandel from Lodi, those bush head train vines that get really twisted and gnarled.
Yeah, yeah.
That's probably one of our most important brands. But then we also have a brand focused on only Zinfandel called Brazen. And brazens, we're using 40 to 100-year-old vines. It's, more bold, more brazen.
Yep.
And that one only is going to focus on Zinfandel. And also, we do some vineyard-specific Zinfandels in that brand from, like, the Monte Rosso vineyard, Rockpile region, to showcase what California does with Zinfandel in all the regions.
Okay. And Clay Station is one that I'm aware of.
Yep.
Do they have anything other than the Viognier within that brand?
No. You know, Clay Station was launched about 12 years ago with lots of different varietals. And the Viognier was just always the star in the Clay Station line. And, you know, the other ones slowly but surely just weren't making sense anymore. So the family decided, let's have Clay Station focus on Viognier and showcase what Lodi does with it, because Viognier is a star white varietal in the Lodi area. We also do a late harvest Viognier also.
Oh, okay. Oh, I've never seen that.
Yeah, it's a limited production.
Can I try it?
I don't have any. We only do like 100 cases.
Okay.
Use it for wine dinners and educational tastings and seminars, just to show people, you know, the diversity of Viognier in the area.
Okay. And any other big brands?
We also have a brand called Loredana, which focuses on Monterey County. So doing Pinot Noir and Rieslings. And then we have a brand called Foghead, which also is Monterey, but focusing more on the Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blancs and a Pinot Noir also. And we call it Foghead because Monterey gets real foggy. And in the morning, the fog comes in and sits on the heads of the vines.
Oh, okay. Fair enough, I suppose. Yeah.
So it's a fun one. And then we also, in the Napa Valley, we own the estate, the Black Stallion Estate, which is an amazing piece of property right on the Silverado Trail. And this is kind of our hospitality mecca, too, where we have the tasting room, the picnic area, you know, the whole beautiful scenery where people can come and enjoy and really experience Napa Valley.
Yep.
And our Black Stallion wines.
Okay. Do you buy all your grapes in, or how much do you have that you've planted yourself? You know, what's your relationship between ownership and purchasing?
We own quite a bit of our own vineyard, the Clay Station Vineyard in Lodi. That's about a 500-hectare piece of land. And then we own the San Bernabe Vineyard, Monterey, which about 2,000 hectares of that is planted. And then we also own a little vineyard, Napa, wrapping around the Black Stallion Estate. But then we do also purchase grapes, but most of that's primarily from the Lodi region, which we have about 100 long-term grape grower contracts in the Lodi area. And then we also have some contracts relationships in Napa and Sonoma area also, because a lot of those are, you know, our family-owned vineyards that you need to, you can't just go out and buy them, you know, and you want their grapes. Like Monte Rosa is an amazing vineyard, but you have to contract to get those grapes.
What did you say the breakdown was?
It's a tough question. It varies. So it's because we also are suppliers to the industry still. We have a side where we sell grapes to other wineries. So it varies. It depends.
Oh, okay. So you're quite traders in grapes almost as well.
We are. Yeah. I mean, we're not only important producers, but we're also important suppliers to the industry because of the amount of land we have and amount of vineyards. So we have grapes going out to other wineries and grapes coming in from from other vineyards. So it does vary.
And what do you think your USP is, unique selling point of Delicato Family Vineyards?
Well, I think, you know, there's a couple things. I mean, one is the fact that we are a family-owned and operated winery, third generation. You know, they've got a lot of passion and commitment. Another one is the fact that the family really focuses on sustainable farming practices, which is becoming a huge trend in California now. And now there's an official sustainable farming certification where wineries can now prove that they farm using sustainable practices. I mean, the family has been doing sustainable activity. Gosh, you know, you talk to the brothers who run it now, and they said they've been composting and recycling and doing these kind of things since they were little kids. They called it smart business. Now there's a name for it called sustainable farming. And so they were really focused on, you know, doing these kind to the earth, you know, limiting use of pesticides, doing recycling programs, treating their employees well, creating a whole big picture of a long-term vision farming. And that's really been amazing. And we are certified in our Monterey vineyard. We are certified in our Lodi vineyard. And we're even certified in our production facility in the Lodi region.
Okay. Do you think the family's going to stay in Lodi and Central Coast and Weber and Napa? Or have you got plans for, you know, dominating the world? If you're one of the big vineyards in America or one of the big producers in America, you must have international plan somewhere.
They, like, you know, California's their home. They're settled there, and that's going to be definitely their primary primary focus. But they are very aware of trends going on in the U.S. and other opportunities. And in fact, just 2 years ago, we launched a new brand called Massimo, which means big. But at Massimo is focused on star varietals from other countries that we're sending our winemakers to Argentina and New Zealand and Spain, having them work with the top winery there, produce a Malbec, produce a Sauvignon Blanc, produce a Rioja, Tempranillo, and then import that into the U.S.
Oh, okay.
So right. We have gone a little bit outside also.
Yeah. And I presume you've got good distribution in the U.S., so you can feed that into your distribution channel?
Yeah, exactly. I know we have a whole team in the U.S. set up, and we distribute to all 50 states. And, varietals like Malbec, we saw such a big opportunity with Malbec really taking off and New Zealand's popularity and Spain's popularity that they said, and they were right. It's a very successful brand, but it's also very good quality and good value. Because what the family really likes to focus on is that over delivering on the quality value equation.
I haven't tried a lot of your wines. I know Clay Station Viognier and Delicata quite well from our tastings, and I've been tasting those wines for years, and they do give good value. We like to show wines that are good examples but aren't silly prices, and some American wines do taste quite nice, but the prices really don't reflect international competition.
Yeah, it's true. And that's what I like. I've been with Delicato for 10 years now, working with the family, and their philosophy is over-delivering on that price-quality equation, making sure to offer the best price and the best quality they can. And it shows in the awards we win. I mean, we won U.S. Wine Producer of the Year 3 years here in London at the IWSC. Chris, we won American Man of the Year. We've been nominated Winery of the Year many times. So we get a lot of recognition for that focus of that quality value. But they do quality value on different levels, too. Like, we have a brand called First Press, which is Napa Valley, but at a value, which those words usually don't go together. But, you can find the First Press wines, for example, here in the UK, and you'll find, the Chardonnay is, $16.99, and the Cab is $17.99. So you'll find a Napa Valley wine for under £20, which is difficult to find.
Yeah. How did you guys find the recession over the last couple of years? Well, America has been really in recession for a while, but there's been a flattening even in the U.S. market for a while.
Yeah, I know. Wine sales have been down. But for us, actually, we have had a good time, a really good time, actually. We've been growing in double digits throughout the whole so-called recession. And a lot of that is because people who are paying, used to pay $20 a bottle of wine, were trading down, trying to save money. And so they were coming into our price category specialty, which ranges from $7 to $15. And so now suddenly we were getting these consumers, and they found that we offered such good quality at those price points that, a lot of them went to us. And then we also had a lot of really great brands that caught people's attention, that caught their eye, that made them look and go, wow, what is that? Like Gnarly Head. We also have a 3-liter bag in the box in the U.S. called Boda Box.
What is it? Boda Box?
Boda Box, which Bota is the pouch they use in Spain to carry water. But we did a 3-liter premium wine in a box. So it's not a cheap wine in a box.
Really?
It's a premium wine in the box.
Yeah.
And launched it in the U.S. And it's now our biggest brand we have. It's a million case brand. So
you don't normally see premium wines. I actually have no problems with bag and box or Boda Box, if you want to call it that, or whatever, because it's never been about the packaging. The packaging is, bag and box is a good, solid packaging.
Oh, yeah.
But they always put rubbish wines in it.
You got to go to Sweden.
Really?
Sweden's amazing. They'll, over 50% of the market's bag in the box up there, and Norway, too. About 60% of the market is bag in the box in Norway. And you will see premium wines that will blow you away that are in a bag in the box. So right. It is being done. It's just not being done here in the UK because the perception of bag in the box is not there yet.
Yeah, no, I don't have a problem with it. But I agree with you. There is a bit of a perception issue. That actually raises an interesting thing. How do you find, because you obviously retail wines throughout Europe.
Yes.
That's your role. How do you find, just as a general overview, the different markets responding to California wines and Delicato wines? Is there do different markets look at the wines differently?
Every market's different. It's amazing to me. You go in and it's all different cultures, different ideas, different palates, different likes. So every market I go in and I try to learn as much as I can about each market and then see how we can fit and help educate on who we are in the markets. And I mean, I've had a lot of success here in Europe because of that approach.
And I suppose you've got different brands, so it's easier to tailor to the market.
Yeah, you know, like countries that like sweeter style wines, like, you know, look more at the Zinfandels. Countries that like, you know, more serious, you know,
who are the sweeter ones in the UK?
Scandinavia, they really love those big, bold, you know, jammy style red wines that are going on. So Zinfandel's really taking off in Scandinavia quite quickly. And, you know, but then you come here to the UK and, you know, they tend to like a little more old world style flair to their wines. So I tend to like some of my Napa stuff does really well. And the Monterey wines do well also.
Okay. What about, do you sell any wine in France?
I do, actually.
Do you? Yeah.
Not a lot.
To the American consulate, perhaps?
No, I have sell a little Zinfandel there. Yep. And that's because they don't grow Zinfandel. So it's, you know, just filling a niche and a need. Now, it's not a lot of volume, but.
What about Germany? Because Germany is, they make a lot of wines, but they're also a reasonable importer of wines.
Yeah, it's a big market. And it's an important import market, but it's, you know, also a very price sensitive market. So it's a real tricky market to be in and focus on. And probably out of all Europe, that was one of the most difficult markets.
Okay. And what's your favorite market? Excluding
besides the UK?
Besides the UK, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's a tough one because I love all the markets I go to. I mean, everybody's always so amazing. And, you know, working with the distributors, I get to dive into the culture and, you know, see local restaurants and experience local things. Some of my best experiences have actually probably been up in Iceland.
Really?
Because, yeah, my distributor will take me up to the Arctic Circle and we go horseback riding and see the Northern Lights. And
I want to see the Northern
Lights.
Hot
springs.
Yeah.
I've had really unique experiences up in Iceland, and then the food quality there has really blown me away too. Their food quality is phenomenal, but then you also get to eat some weird things that you will never find anywhere else.
And there's a reason for that.
Yeah, well, they're okay, but I just don't go in February.
And what's the most unusual or thing that you've come across from a wine perspective in Europe? Being a Californian and quite heavily engaged in the European wine scene. I don't know. What do you call as unusual, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think like we're talking about bag-in-the-box, the whole bag-in-the-box phenomenon up in Scandinavia is unusual. You know, it's unique to that area.
Because the wines aren't cheap there because of the duty, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. They have high duties. And so, but in the summertime, especially, the people like to go up to their country homes and they go camping and hiking up in the mountains. And so bag-in-the-box sales just take off that time because people don't want to be lugging bottles all over the place. So they want a nice wine in a box to bring up to their country home. And you see, you know, amazing wines in a box. I mean, we have an old vine, Zinfandel, in a box. I mean, you see Chablis, you see, I think there's Barolos, Reposos. I mean, you could find all kinds of things in bag-in-the-box
really?
Up there.
Oh,
so, I mean, that's a real unique thing that you really don't find anywhere else.
In which market?
Sweden, Norway, Finland a little, you know, Iceland. Yeah. It's amazingly like this whole Scandinavia belt that just love the premium wine in a bag in the box.
Brilliant. Okay then, Elizabeth, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Cheers, bud.
Bye.